Hi, I'm talking to Florence Abrams, who's part of the Capital District Border Watch group that went down to Brownsville, Texas, at the very southern, probably southern western corner of Texas, as it borders Mexico, and there is the Brownsville border. Hello, Florence, how are you?
I'm doing well, given the circumstances.
Well, you've been back a few days now. You went down there as a volunteer from the 7th of March until the 18th, am I right?
Well, we went down on the 11th, and we were supposed to come back the 18th, and four of us came back 2 days earlier, and the other four, including me, came back 1 day early.
Okay, you went down there as a volunteer to witness what was happening at the border in Brownsville, to work with the World Central Kitchen, which is Jose Andres's project, which is a pretty remarkable thing. What was all that like?
It was, to summarize it in one sentence, it was both heartbreaking and heartwarming to be there.
Well, you've got to get
just
more than
amazing.
One sentence.
It was an amazing experience. Amazing.
What did you do while you were down there?
Well, we were very fortunate because the coronavirus was basically chasing us as we went through our week down there, but we managed to do all of the things that we had hoped to do. We worked, as you mentioned, with World Central Kitchen, which was just such an incredible experience to see hands-on what they do every day. And we worked with Team Brownsville, helping to get supplies across to the camp in Matamoros, Mexico, and to serve meals, serve water, and to provide some activities. It's called La Escuelita, the little school, but it's more some learning and some positive activities for the children. And also, a few of us got to witness somewhat, and I can tell you more about that when we get to it. We got to go to the airport and watch some deportees be boarded for a flight to Guatemala, regardless of where they each were from. That's where the flight was going that particular day, and that's where they were going to be dumped.
Well, let's start with the World Kitchen, what you did with them. Did you learn to cook anything? Did you work with the chef? Did you simply serve or, I mean, well, did you procure vegetables and food? What did you do with them?
As I think I mentioned before we went, I thought we would be doing a lot of the chopping and peeling. And for most of us, that's what we did. I mean, we did everything from cleaning the surfaces on which they worked, cleaning the containers in which they bring food over, chopping, peeling, garnishing some of the huge trays of food. Some people made sandwiches according to their instructions, and everything was high quality, top class, lots of caring into what went into the meals, and they were both nutritious and meals that were familiar to people who are living in the camps right now. In other words, they were doing a lot of Central American cooking for the most part.
Well, tell me, how many people do you think were there in the camps? Now, these are the camps in Mexico. So you went from Brownsville, you crossed the border every day, and you went to Mexico and worked with the people there. How many people were in the camps?
There are at least a couple of thousand. I think the number of meals they were serving ranged around 1,000. That was the hot meals. And then they also prepared things like sandwiches and meals on the go for people.
Well, that's really spectacular. World Central Kitchen. That's a great organization. So you mentioned you also did some education, some schools. Some schooling projects. Yes,
I mean, you use the term very loosely when you say schooling because they have a wide range of children they're serving. Not all of the children speak Spanish. Most of them do, but you even have indigenous languages, and you have some people there from Africa, and there may be Haitians there who speak Creole or French. So there's a variety, and what they do is they divide the children by age. And then they have activities that are supposedly age-suitable for the kids. For the older kids, they do 15-minute segments of activities, and then the kids move from tent to tent. For the younger ones, and that happens to be the group I worked with, the three-year-olds, although we certainly had some children younger than three, and we had a few older than three in the tent, we had the children for a full hour.
Wow.
We did some easy yoga with the little ones to get them moving a little bit, get out some of their energy. And then because we had them for an hour and we thought we would only have them 15 minutes, one of the local teachers had some activities for them to do involving body parts, teaching them body parts. And so we did some singing and some pantomiming and some coloring, and we really got to interact with small little groups of the kids. And it was also wonderful to see a lot of the parents were there with them.
Did you see the encampments? Do you know what conditions they're living under while they're waiting to come across the border, if they do?
Again, the coronavirus was basically chasing us, so I didn't get to see a great deal of the encampment. I basically was on the main path through the encampment, but I certainly got to see how close the tents are and a lot of the little outdoor stoves that people have set up and clotheslines with clothes and a couple of different rows of porta potties and the dining tent and hand washing stations that have been set up by Team Brownsville and water purification that has been set up by Team Brownsville. So I got to see a pretty good amount of it without being able to really go exploring.
And what about health care? Is there any health care that's being provided either on the Mexican side or on the, you know, do we have people coming over?
There actually is a trailer that Global Resources Management has there. And I also saw a tent for Doctors Without Borders. I know Global Resources Management was actively seeing people that day. And they are building a small hospital adjacent to the camp, which now with the coronavirus will definitely be needed.
So Team Brownsville is the one who's actually organizing this. Who is and what is Team Brownsville?
Team Brownsville is a group of local, primarily local people from Brownsville, although I think some snowbirds who live in Brownsville during the winter are part of it. Many of them are teachers or retired teachers who got together when the MPP program first started and decided that they would try to take care of the asylum seekers who were coming and had no place to stay and had no reliable source of food. So they started feeding people on their own, and when they got to 1,000 and over 1,000 meals a day that they were trying to cook in their own homes and bring across the border, they teamed up with World Central Kitchen for World Central Kitchen to take over the meal prep, although Team Brownsville is still actively involved in that.
So do they cross the border every day and bring food and things in?
Team Brownsville, yes. Team Brownsville not only brings food over there, but I was with a couple of the members the night I came over, and in their wagons, that people carry wagons across the bridge with food and supplies, they had things such as sanitary products, sandals, a variety of necessities, and also on Sunday for the school, they brought over all kinds of supplies and rewards, toys and activity books, crayons, things like that for the kids.
So, and in other words, there's things that have changed because I believe the border is closed now entirely.
Yes. Yes.
Were you there during that event or during that happening?
We were there as things were getting tougher and tougher to still be able to do. While we were there, World Central Kitchen stopped using volunteers to bring the food over. They took the food over in a couple of trucks, I believe. I'm trying to think what else. La Escuelita, that was the school program we went to that Sunday, was the last school program that Team Brownsville was going to be doing, because the positive thing was that the Yes I Can Foundation was supposed to come in April and start providing school for the kids 5 days a week. Obviously, that's on hold now. World Central Kitchen is no longer providing meals because they're short on volunteers, and they've determined it's not safe for either their staff or for the residents of the camp to have this interaction going on during the virus pandemic. So all kinds of alternative arrangements are being made.
Okay, well, since Border Watch Capital District is what brought you there, you were also able to find out what happens with the procedure of immigration for these people. Is that right, Francis?
We did get to see an afternoon in what is called the tent courts, where the asylum seekers appear for basically preliminary types of hearings. You're not allowed to see actual deportation hearings, or I believe they're referred to as merit hearings. But you can see preliminary hearings. And I wasn't sure I was going to go because I thought, well, if they're just procedural preliminary hearings, maybe there's nothing worth seeing. And one of the people involved in witness MPP urged me to go. He said, it will be worth your time to go. And he was absolutely right in terms of what I saw, that the obstacles that these people have to go through to present their case is just unbelievable.
I understand they have some legal assistance from our side of the border, or...
There is very little legal help available. My understanding, and I'm trying to get in touch with them, is that there is a small group. When I say small, it's composed of two attorneys and two paralegals who are trying to help all of these people in Matamoros, in the encampment. Of the seven preliminary hearings we saw, only one person had an attorney representing her, and he was appearing by phone. The judge also appears by video, and these folks are appearing literally in a tent. And the interesting thing is, this judge was located less than 20 miles away from them. So why this all has to proceed by video and they have to be in a tent, I don't know.
What were the courts like? How many people did they process, let's say? How many tents were there? How many tent courts? How many people were they able to process in a day, would you estimate?
We got in for the afternoon procedure. I'm sure it varies all the time, and it varies with what the judge's docket is for that day. The proceeding, we saw there were seven cases that day, and that afternoon, I should say. And the last two cases were a mother and a daughter, and this was the case that really affected me the most. They were called shortly before 3 p.m. The judge then said he had to take a break and would be back shortly. The break, and I don't know whether he was dealing with some other matters, but the break lasted a full hour, and then he came back to finish up their hearing. And one of the things I found very disturbing, I don't know why, maybe it was because it was toward the end of the day, but I felt he was more difficult with them than he had been with any of the previous respondents, I guess you would say. The mother had consulted or had spoken to an attorney, but it was pretty clear to me that the attorney wasn't representing them. The judge asked if, well, the judge said that he didn't see any appearance by the attorney, and then he kept asking her, had she hired the attorney? And he wouldn't deviate from asking the question in that way. And although there's a translator, the translator is the court translator, and I gather cannot deviate in the translation. So I think the real question was, had the attorney agreed to represent the mother and daughter? But that's not the way the judge was asking the question repeatedly. And so the mother was understandably confused about how to answer the question.
No, it's a communication problem. So the process after she goes through court, or anyone goes through court, are they then released or put into detention, or are they brought back to Mexico? How is this? What happens after?
The people that we saw were all people who were in the encampment. I'm sure okay. There are people who are actually detained who appeared, but we just got to see people from the encampment. And I do want to mention something, because I think this was really significant. Before you're allowed to go in as a visitor, you're given the whole list of rules of what you can and can't do while you're watching, including you are seated a number of yards back from the people who are appearing in court, and you cannot have any communication with them, among other things. You can't bring in a cell phone. You know, there's a whole list. But we had, and I don't know whether he was an ICE employee or security guard who is a contractor with ICE, who was, we called him the PR guy for ICE. He was Hispanic. He was very, very nice, gave us a very rosy picture of how all the asylum seekers are treated by ICE, that it's not what we, you know, are told or what we hear. It's actually really nice, and they have a daycare center, and on and on and on. And then the last sentence he said was, this is the highest paying job in this area.
Interesting.
And I
who monitors it? Is this all ICE? Is this all the ICE people?
It is.
Right. Okay, let's say we've only got a few minutes left, so I wanted to just ask you a couple of questions. Where are these people? Are there people who become detained? Is there a deportation process? What goes on after? I mean,
one
what
of
goes
the
on
things
if they are accepted into the country? What happens to them?
One of the things that we hoped to see, and I use the word hoped, it's really not a good word, but we thought it was important to witness the actual deportations happening.
Okay.
And that is, ICE makes it extremely difficult for people to witness this occurring. And I'll give you some details. We got up at 4 in the morning. They don't announce when the flights will occur until the latest time possible. So at 4 in the morning, we were told there was going to be an early flight of deportees. We got up, we went to the airport, we got there at least an hour ahead of when the flight was supposed to leave. We saw the plane. The bus full of deportees, was parked in back of the plane, so you really couldn't see much of the bus. And then when they got closer to boarding the deportees, they moved in two large trucks to block our view of the plane. Then on top of that, they shone lights down, big headlights, to help, you know, to help prevent you from looking straight ahead at the plane. We were told by security we had to stay 10 feet in back of the fence. And despite all that, what I saw was from the waist down of people with their hands manacled, stopping to have their ankles shackled before they boarded the plane. It was one of the most horrific things I have ever viewed.
And where were these people being sent to? Do you have any idea?
That day, we were told that the flight was to Guatemala. On any particular day, there could be one or more flights to one or more locations. And they people are not always sent to their country of origin. They're sent to whatever country the flight is going to that day.
I have another question before we go. One is, I understand that there was a quote not that long ago that these are the people who come across the border, are bringing drugs, bringing crime, and are rapists. What was your experience with the people that you met there that were coming across or that were waiting in camps to come through for immigration?
Let me answer that with my summary of my two times over in the camp. The first time, I was over there serving water at the Saturday night meal. There was a line of people that formed getting ready to get dinner, and they had an estimated 1,000 people that they were going to be feeding that night. I did not see one fight, one rude exchange, any shouting, any pushing, any shoving. I saw none of that. I saw people politely waiting in line. There were children helping World Central Kitchen. They were helping me pump water out for people. They were helping on the food line. I did not see, I'm not saying that nothing bad ever happens there, but I did not see one person acting in any kind of rude manner, which is more than I can say when I go to the grocery store here.
Well, Florence, I can't thank you enough for having the time to talk with us today. So if people want to get more information about who is volunteering, who's going down to the border, and who should they contact? Would it be Capital District Border Watch?
Yes, Capital District Border Watch is a great source locally, and we follow. There's a Team Brownsville Volunteers page. There's Witness MPP page, but some of them are private groups, so they should get in touch with Capital District Border Watch if they're interested. And I'm also going to say, I'm going to make a plea for donating to Team Brownsville, donating to World Central Kitchen, and donating to Global Resources Management, because they can certainly use the funding more than ever right now.
Florence, I thank you so much. This is Florence Abrams. She's speaking. Well, you're back in the Capital District now, but you've just returned from the border with Mexico. Thanks for your reporting. I really appreciate your time. So it's Andrea.
You're very welcome.
Good evening. Thanks for your time. Thank you.